it! Ladies and gentlemen, their incredible, edible, sensational, the Smurfs! Round of applause!
When you start to play music, it's like many other things in life. You do it without actually thinking about it. You don't plan it. You just do it. It's what you are. You don't actually sit back and think, well, what shall we be? What shall we do? Who shall we aim at? What market shall we supply? But that is a unique period in anybody's creative life, that you just do it without even thinking about it, and you can never, ever repeat it. Playing in a band to us, as I recall it. It was a life's mission almost. And probably you hit us our finest hour, was it?
This is the story of Neil, Mike, Simon, Mogg, and some of their friends. I started taping it in 1978 when they were the Smurfs, and the programme I made then began at the beginning.
When we left school, we just sort of went abroad.
We were going to Australia, we were on our way to Australia to work in the mines and earn money and motorbikes and things like that. And we just did a bit of busking and we just got to really enjoy it.
When we first went there, we'd stand still, you know, and we sang and people just walked past us, whatever we played. And that's when we started dancing to try and make them stop. And then, like, once we started dancing, it was great. We'd get a crowd, and the crowds were great, but they never gave you any money, because we used to think it was unethical to collect. But eventually we were sort of asking them, you know, in about three languages.
Got any more? It's gonna cost ya! Un, deux, trois!
Well, she was just 17 again. You know what I mean again. And the way she looked is way beyond compare.
We got it very efficiently organised. So we started off at 7:30 in the morning and we just play a few songs, go around with a bag, you know, asking for money. Most people would give us something. And if they didn't, you know, it didn't matter. And occasionally we got people that didn't like it. Like one bloke just came right up to me and just hit me in the chin, like a good solid punch. We used to earn phenomenal amounts. But it was very hard work, you know. You said make a wreck of you a couple of weeks of that and you're not fit to talk to anybody, you know, and you're gibbering and shaking all the time. You know, you go to bed and you're just lying awake shaking.
We left Paris with over £1,000 each in a car and we decided, right, let's get a band, let's be a band.
At this point, the Smurfs got themselves a manager, the editor of a small alternative paper, the New Manchester Review, Andrew Jaspin.
We looked on Andrew as a man who knew what he was doing, and we thought he was really old and was the right man to be the manager. But we're only talking recently that he was actually in his early 20s.
I actually consider myself to be more sort of a friend advising them, and a friend who's slightly older than them and knows a little bit more about the business. I actually am very fond of them as well.
The voice of magnanimity. No, I mean, we have Mogs to thank for introducing us to Andrew.
No.
Because, I mean, I'm very grateful to him. He's a splendid chap, I'm very fond of him myself. Because basically, I mean, we'd been out of the town for a long time. Come back and hearing all these strange group names like Clash and Jam and all this and thinking what's going on, but we must get involved. And Moggs seemed to be tapped into the local sort of music thing, you know, in some way. And he said, I know this chap who can give us a gig. And we went to play for Andrew and the rest is history, you know.
Dave, have we got any drinks on stage?
Yeah, it's always taking 12 cans off.
Right, I'll take some more.
I think we all get a bit nervous before we go, and I do now. I didn't used to get nervous because I never really ever thought, you know, it mattered. Whenever we played, you know, I always felt, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, just go on and have fun. But more and more now I'm feeling, you know, like it does matter and that it's important. I think it's a good sort of state to be in because you're keyed up, you know, and you're tense and you know, you're alert.
Very musical and funky.
Right? I don't know.
Come on, you're late. Let's go.
Go round.
Good evening. Thank you for coming. I'm glad you could make it. I would ask you to meet four young men who come from Manchester and brought the weather with them. Will you please welcome the Smirks?
We've actually had discussions, we've had two big meetings to discuss what they wore on stage, and luckily you've got four real individuals there who couldn't give a damn about following fashion as such.
I started wearing suits for a while because I got a suit for the first time in my life and I quite liked it, you know, so I wore it for a while. But, you know, it wasn't really me. I mean, I'm tough and sort of misunderstood. So now, you know, I've become a simpler character. You know, by a sort of jeans and black T-shirt kind of thing, you know, which is more sort of coherent.
Mog is an absolute character. He sort of comes on with these huge hobnail shoes. He wears sort of trousers that are always too big for him and a belt that never does up properly, and his shirts are always got some stains on them or whatever. And he ensures that the band does not become, as far as I'm concerned, a teeny bop band, because he's, I mean, he drinks and he never looks tidy, and he ensures that he is the actual character in the band.
Come on, girls, settle down. Yeah, find come your on. All right, come on, lads. Down you go. Right. This is a song called Wasted Passion.
It's for all the people who came too early.
1, 2, 3, 4.
They say, what are you going to do when you make it? But I really feel that you make it, like, every time you go on stage and people enjoy it, because that's all it's always ever going to be, is just going on stage and playing.
I can see myself playing in 40 years, if I'm still alive in 40 years' time. I can see myself still playing then, because there's hardly anything else in life that interests me, you know, apart from drinking and girls and things like that. I mean, I've been on the stage and, I mean, some nights it's horrible, but just being on stage and playing and everybody off stage enjoying it and really getting into it, it's great. It's the best feeling in the world, you know. There's nothing better. That's what it's all for. That's what it's about.
When you're actually on stage playing and there's old people there, you know, and when you know you're getting across, when we do seem to always get across, you just get surges of energy and all sorts of, you know, like feelings and emotions that all seem to sort of surge up. But it's really, like, it's really exciting. Sometimes you may just tingle, you know, you just can't help it. You just, you know, you just get to a point in a song and you know, you've got the atmosphere and you've got, you know, all the sound, it's quite loud on stage, and you just tingle. You can't help it.
Ten years ago, we were at a peak that was about to be reached in our career. We were about to release our second single on Berserkly after the first single had done reasonably well. We were working with a producer of our own choice. Second single, and things were looking very good. Berserkly Records had just moved to another major company, Polydor. We were promised the world, as it is often promised to people, and everything was glowing.
That second single was a tune called Rosemary, and back in 78, I eavesdropped on its evolution.
2, 3, 4. Take, for example, the Ethiopian refugee. He was a good-looking boy with a head on his shoulders, trying hard to be free. But he worked for 14 hours in a foreign hotel, trying to get a visa, but it wasn't going very well.
as you can hear, that song's sort of got it, certainly got its limitations. Yeah. We write songs all the time, and often, like, we write another song that might be a good song, and you just take bits out of the songs that you've written before because, you know, it can be really good. And that's what we did with Rosemary. So the song starts with a section that's like taken directly out of the last song, which goes like this. 2, 3, 4. Betty Lou was pretty. She was the best looking girl around. All of us were after Betty, but they could never ever get her down. They never noticed Rosemary. She was the hottest piece of cake in town. All I ever saw was Betty. They were the losers all round. Then we're coming on to the chorus. And this chorus was also a nick from another song. I mean, not a nick from somebody else's song, but it was another song, which was very, very self-indulgent and embarrassing for people to listen to, which went, yes, I will bear my sorrows as a man, but I must also feel them as a man. I cannot but remember such things were and were most dear to me.
Henry Fielding.
Which is, in fact, a quote from Henry Fielding. But anyway, again, like, it was nicked out of that song and changed to get the chorus, which is... 2, 3, 4. Rosemary, I can feel your agony. Rosemary, there's a boy like you, it's maybe me. And I got you in my hand, yeah, 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 yeah. I play for you in my hand, yeah, 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 yeah.
I remember Si being really pleased when he wrote Rosemary. I remember him phoning me up and saying, hey, I've got this great new song, you know, and it's dead good and it's dead rocky, and which it was at the time. It was probably one of the most rocky songs I do. And I said, what's it like? He said, oh, hang on a minute. And he played me Rosemary, you know, over the telephone with him. And all I could hear was this wailing in this acoustic guitar in the background. And he picked up the phone after and he said, but what did you think? I said, yeah, it was it was all right, you know.
Yeah, and then when it comes to the chorus, just play the accent. Yeah, we'll go from the top then.
Can you take it all down in the cameras quite a lot?
Yeah, I've done it.
Great, because there's blood dripping out of me ears.
Where are you going to play then?
I'm going to play this when I've tuned it.
Yeah.
In a lead cell. And a few of this bit.
Working on words here, but we're trying to get a Frenchism into it, because it's all sort of got the whole thing has got slightly like Jean Louis and like Betty Lou.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that.
What's French about Betty Lou?
Well, it's kind of like
Betty Lou, yeah? Gladys
Marie.
Sneaky Dave was older. He always wore a denim shirt. Had a pretty wife and child. And also the occasional flirt. But Betty Lou, she liked him. And I was just a brash young jerk. All I got was the cold shoulder. She simply said it wouldn't work. Rosemary. But I thought maybe we could get a Frenchism somewhere in, like...
What's French with cold shoulder?
Sneaky Dave was older. He always had that je ne sais quoi. Had a pretty wife, but we can't think of anything to rhyme with je ne sais quoi. Always had that je ne sais quoi.
I try to get them to write out their lyrics and go through the lyrics with them, because some of them are really pretty crass lyrics as far as I'm concerned. I do go through lyrics with them because I personally am very concerned that lyrics are properly thought out, that they aren't degrading to women or put across images of manhood which I think are out of date. This comes back to what I consider to be a modern pop group. At some stage I would like the band to be sufficiently satisfied with the lyrics that we could actually print lyrics so that if people wanted to be able to read the lyrics, they could read them and they would stand up in their own right as thoughtful writing.
This. Sneaky Dave was older. He always had that je ne sais quoi. Eyes were blue just like Paul Newman.
muscles big as Beretta.
I think the lyrics are great. They're current, and, you know, I think they're very modern. Like Rosemary, as it turns out, you know, it's about, you know, the sort of hidden theme of, you know, of the loneliness. And then you've got quite a subplot of a successful relationship, which all sort of fits in quite well. And I think that, you know, that's like a modern love song.
Right, OK, Si. Take it away.
Don't bring it back.
Ziggy Dane was older. Always had that je ne sais quoi. Eyes were blue just like Paul Newman. Muscles big as Beretta. And Betty Lou, she liked him. I was just a brash young jerk. All I got was the cold shoulder. She simply said it wouldn't work.
Can you just like articulate that just a little bit more clearly?
I bleed for you!
Yeah.
Right.
I bleed for you! I bleed for you!
I bleed for you! In my high, yeah, 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 yeah! I bleed for you! In my high, yeah, 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 yeah!
Si?
Hello?
You know all the high, yeah, 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 yeah bits?
Yeah.
If you came in with the huh, just as, you know, the bit where there's nothing going on? If you came in with a her just a bit later.
Like,
no, not her. The her on high, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where'd you end
up? You know, I'll bleed for you.
Just take a copy.
In my higher.
Yeah. And can you hold on art for a bit longer?
In my high. More dramatic, like.
Well, not more dramatic, but the timing would sound better.
Okay.
And hold the art. Art. You see what I mean?
You mean to not try and drop down? Let's hear. You? Oh, give us a... I'll be for you! In my high! In my high! Yeah, 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 yeah! And not come down.
No. Oh, no, no. You know, say the whole word.
In my high! Yeah, 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 yeah!
No.
Too long. I'll do the first four faster. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
Figaro.
Yeah. Brilliant.
This will show them what an irritating little combo we are.
In my
I like it, but I think
it's great.
I thought maybe an interesting, you know, like some sort of melodic sort of lead line going, you know, just going off into the distance.
In the last bit, yeah.
I got this gadget here, which could actually sound pretty good, but you don't actually.
You play your lead and sing the tune at the same time?
No, you don't. You just mic it up. You just mic the tube up.
And singing it?
No, you play through it.
Hey, great.
They can do all kinds of wondrous things with those machines. They harmonised it and delayed it and put it through a voice box and distorted it and reverb.
I don't think that sound, exactly that sound, can ever be reproduced again because Chaz tried to get the same sound the next night and, with the same equipment that he used, and the box blew up.
It's really good riff, isn't it? Hey, we've got a riff, lads.
That's what people go to work whistling. Not even make Radio 2 this.
I'm not happy with that at all, that guitar stuff, because I think it's like a really good tune, and it doesn't fit with the other tune. I mean, it doesn't clash like with harmonically,
but it fights it for attention, you know what I mean, when you're listening to it. And like in the chorus, the tune of the actual Rosemary, it fights it for attention and kind of flattens it off, yeah, in a way.
It's, you know, if you used it sort of like tastefully.
Yeah, but I mean, how can you use it tastefully?
Well, just like use it, don't use it where you don't want it, and use it where you want it.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we have a drink?
I wouldn't worry about it, you know, I wouldn't get too neurotic about it. Because it's just, as you said, all it is.
Bad decisions over the recording of Rosemary, where the producer took over and completely changed the whole song from what the band played. It was quite a nice hook. I mean, it was probably quite, what was done with it was probably quite good, but it wasn't a reflection of the Smirks. It was nothing to do with the Smirks.
And it went 2, 3, 4.
So at least we can remember it was probably a very good hook, but it was not the Smirks.
What's the rest of it?
I mean, the important thing about the band was that we had a very simple vision. We were not good musicians, and we had a clear idea, I think, of where we wanted to be, with no knowledge of how we wanted to do it. Always had the je ne sais quoi. Eyes of blue just like Paul Newman. Muscles big as Beretta. Betty Lou, she liked him. I was just a fashion jerk. All I got was the cold shoulder. She simply said it wouldn't work. Rosemary was not a success, and the follow-up album was never released. In January 79, with Berserkly's checks bouncing merrily, the company's boss resigned and the Smirks were dropped from the label. But they carried on regardless. I'll be for you in my We'd seen ourselves in the press, we'd had marvellous reviews, singles of the week, and suddenly, instead of the naive young kids from Manchester, we took ourselves seriously. Instead of concentrating possibly on what you're doing, half your mind's thinking about, are we wearing the right clothes, for God's sake? I mean, what the difference does the clothes make? It's, as Michael Palin said, it's not the shorts, it's the machine inside that counts. We were probably had ideas way above our station. Instead of being humble pop musicians, we started to try to become marketing men and do all that. With this song, we should do a slow one. No, we should do a fast one. Oh, what about the meaningful lyric, instead of just going out and doing it. All I get is misery. Remember those badges we had done that said The Smirks? I remember a kid came up to me and he said, what's the name of the band? The Smiths. You'll never get anywhere with a name like that.
That's brilliant.
I thought about it all those years later. I saw a poster on the wall in town said The Smiths, and I thought, somebody's done it and they'll never get anywhere.
Well, that shows where we've been going wrong.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
The Smirks basically wound down in about 1980, was it?
Yeah.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mike became a freshie. Mark became a permanent Alberto.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Played a gig in Tel Aviv and everybody collapsed through flu and alcoholic poisoning, so the Albertos were knocked on the head.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Simon and myself formed a band called Big Noise, which lasted about 3 gigs.
Started an acting career doing 15 episodes of Brookside.
1, 2, 3, 4.
And then myself and Mike had another band, a rockabilly band called the Hula Hoolas.
That's right. And we formed the Sons of the Charlie Parkers, the three of us, with another bass player when Moggs was in New York. Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Then was asked to join this band with this red-haired singer, which became Simply Red, and then through the way that those things happen, I was no longer in Simply Red.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I went to university, became a student.
I was at university too.
Gave music up. Did 2 years.
Hung about smoking dope all day, drifted, lying on your couch.
Drifted back into music.
Me and Snuff were playing in the jazz band.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Took the third year out to pursue a deal with EMI. Thought I didn't have to go back, went back. Finished it off.
and then began Distant Cousins 2 years ago. And that's the last 10 years.
Ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure, please welcome the Distant Cousins.
So, Neil, Simon and Marg are back together. Mike has given up music, he's managing a comedian called Frank Sidebottom. In his place, Distant Cousins have a drummer called Snuff, and there's also a keyboard player called Rick, and a singer called Doreen.
When we were doing the tour last time, Moggs was being the tour manager, and Moggs was being the total opposite of what he was like, you know, 10 years ago. You know, like telling Neil off for talking too loud in the hotel at 12 o'clock, you know. And when in at one time, Moggs would have been drunk and just shouting the place down, you know. Yeah.
That is the main difference between doing it now and doing it then is that we're older and more responsible. And not only that, but older and weaker bodies, and you can't drink till 6 in the morning and then do a decent gig the next night.
Well, that's just, I remember being on the road 10 years ago, and it used to be like, oh, there's a pub, let's stop at the pub. Yeah, you know? And that, this time it was like, there's a chemist. We're all so ill after a day.
Yeah.
You know, the van was just packed up with medicines.
Distant chemists. But there was still the same rush and the same enjoyment when you hit the stage.
When you hit the chemist.
Good Lord.
There's a bolt, let's stop.
And it's still the same sort of like men's outing, even though we have women with us this time.
Well, it's still...
But you tend to play backgammon and chess and read a book before you go on, as opposed to get drunk.
I think there's still the ethos there, certainly with myself, and I think with Simon, of the Daft Lads who went to see The Clash and said that's the sort of band we want to be, even though we are slightly better on our instruments. Still, there is like the punk rock ethic is there at heart, and we still want to go out and make a lot of noise.
But if you need slap talk, I will slap you down in and around your body.
You get worried before going on stage, depending on what the gig is. Like the tour that we did recently with the Bundu Boys, most of those gigs we got from the hotel, we hit the stage, and we didn't think about it. The odd gig where there were supposed to be like 50 A&R men who didn't turn up, then those sort of gigs, we think, oh God, what's going to happen? Oh no, the lights aren't right, oh, my trousers aren't pressed right, and things like that. Because it's not just a gig, it's the gig that could make or break your career.
I'm the guitarist, and I'm trying not to stare at my fingers too much, and I'm sort of like trying to actually pick up on what's going on around. And like, I think if you can get to that stage where you're enjoying what's happening without worrying about what the people out front are thinking, you've done as much as you can do. You don't exactly tingle, but when you get those moments when it feels like it's all working right, you know, like where if you're stood in the right place and you can hear everything exactly how you hear it in your head, and you know that everybody else in the band is doing the same, it's great. But then you can play really badly. People hate it. And you come off thinking, why did we bother?
You get the great highs and the great depths, you know. Mm-hmm. You in 24 hours you can be on top of the world. So wanting to get the razor blades out.
We're not really ever going to make it on being technically brilliant. Apart from Snuff, we've actually been told that technically it's fine. These are the people that say, but.
With Distant Cousins, we do have a strong belief in what we're doing. And the thing is that if you worry when you do a bad gig and think, well, what are we doing wrong? If you worry about that too much, you disappear up your own backside, because people are constantly saying to you, well, you should do this, you should do that, and you should do that. And we've turned around, like Jive Records, and they're not known for producing great arts, they said to us, well, the R&B stuff's great, but I don't know what the hell you're doing with the rest of the stuff. And we've said, but the audience does. The audience never says to us, well, why are you doing this? It's just A&R men. And if A&R men were so good, then they'd form their own band and be number one on the charts.
Crucial issues, really, I think, are about how far you bend. everybody has to bend to a certain extent, but I think it's important to stand firm, certainly when you're doing something like creating art, and say, either you like it or else that's it. And unfortunately, if you do that and you haven't got what the market wants or what the people who buy for the market, record company A&R men, want, you just will not get on. Fortunately, if you have got it, then you put yourself in a very strong position. But again, that's for the patient man, for the man of impatience who just wants to get on. He's quite willing to say, oh yeah, maybe they're right, let's change, let's do this, let's do that. And we were party to that. And I have a feeling that they still do a bit of it now, I don't know.
Now it's different, it's, things are deliberate, considered, maybe too much. And you're trying to put across your music, you're not out to sort of sell yourselves as people, or you're not really selling attitudes.
Thank you very, very much. We are distant cousins all the way from Manchester. We are supporting the Bundu Boys this evening, slightly warming you up, in other words. And now I'm going to sing for you Spinning the Wheel.
Gigs that were there in 1978, 1979. There's not music on every night of the week, and you're playing. It was mainly, well, it was all universities on the last tour we did.
Yeah.
And those small clubs that were there have just gone to the wall.
The demand for live music is not what it wants.
There's less of a circuit, there's less venues, there's just as many bands, if not more, because all the technology's allowed more people to be groups in their living room and they all want to do gigs.
There isn't the money there to do the gigs. I mean, the Bundy Boys tour that we did, we spent a good few £1,000s. Just making it work and making sure it was a good gig every night, which it was. And now we are stuck in the unenviable position where we can't afford to do gigs.
That's right, a band in the Distant Cousins position would not get more than an average of £50-£100 in a support gig, and they're not in a position to get above a support gig, really.
Yeah, sure.
It's about time you pay for PA lights, just sheerly moving the band about. It really, you're talking £800-£900 a night. And it's physically impossible, unfortunately. So in that case, where do they go? What do they do next?
We got a publishing deal, and we spent all the money promoting ourselves and doing live work. And now we've changed our tack and we've just got a little studio and we're just writing songs, basically. And we've put the live stuff on the shelf for a bit.
I've got to.
That's
good, aren't they? Get some heat in here.
Come on. Are we returning to zero now?
It's already gone.
What was that drum track on?
8.
It's just another stage of songwriting to get to the situation where we can be offered a deal. A recording deal, and then we'll have the money to actually go out and work again. I mean, without that now, there's no future.
We need the support, we need somebody to invest in us. That's what we've got to do.
You've got to have a very impressive bunch of songs.
It's that what's it, isn't it? Should have put the rim shot in. It's a bit late now. Can you
but it's only a rough one, isn't it, anyway? And here's this, Hopkins.
By having this recording equipment, we can maybe explore ideas, get to a certain point where we think this is working and go on with it, or ditch it at an earlier stage very, very easily.
The thing is that either Simon or Doreen come up with the germ of an idea and we knock it about between us, and it's either working for us in a good song or it's rubbish and it's thrown in the bin.
Shall we just stick this thing down here and then do a new bit of tune?
So he's coming in on one, going to four.
Mm.
You're coming in on two.
Four, two and going to one. The thing is, you've not got to get confused with channels and tracks, like, it's easy to.
Playing in a band, I suppose, is like gnawing away at the bottom of a tree, like a lumberjack. Eventually, the more you hit the tree with the axe, eventually the tree will fall, one hopes, if you can get that far.
I can't remember whether you started then or not, so try going now. As though you're doing two verses.
The time has come for you and me, for us to face reality.
It's incredibly easy to be cynical. Very, very easy. Very, very easy. Mm-hmm. But I think optimism is like the only way you can really operate. I mean, if you're cynical, you'll stop. You'll go backwards.
I have a certain amount of cynicism, but I mean, that comes out in anger more than anything else about things that happen to the band, which is not the band's fault, you know, certain lack of support that we've had. And that just makes me angry, very, very angry. And the cynicism is knocked back by anger and optimism.
My head, my eyes, my sense of smell. Too often this game is played, all just for a quiet lay that sometimes never lasted long.
It's harder to get anywhere. It's like it is definitely back to the pre the early 70s, you know, where a company won't really look at you unless they can see mega books right away.
Yeah. Which is very sad, because the incentive should be you've got a guitar, you know, a couple of chords, get out and do it, and that, you know.
But that, I don't think that'll ever return, ever.
No, it's got to.
I've tried to feel good and strong and forget, but in my mind I'm messed up.
Do I plug in Mogs and go along with it or what? No?
It's very difficult to say things, isn't it, when we're at this level?
To say things?
Yeah.
What, like you hate it?
No, I think it's great, but I think that the chords follow the vocal melody too much. I think it should be less chords in. So I think it just makes it too sort of nursery rhyme-ish, with the guitar going the same as the vocal completely.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, you see, because that's the song.
The thing is,
it's like saying, I don't like the song, if you don't like that chord.
If we build on that guitar that's there, then it's just going to be everybody playing along with that bit, and it's dead.
Well, I'll tell you what, you play now, right, your bass, and I'll take the guitar out and see what comes out.
The thing is that
if you did the first verse like that, and then did the second verse.
Yeah, what I'm saying is there's times when it's all right with that guitar following the vocal, but when it goes to that second bit where there's about 500 chords, then gives us a cigarette.
That's part of it, Mogs. It's the whole song.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be the whole song.
Well, it's how I've written it with Doreen. It's how it's there. It's not like...
Yeah, but what
it's
I'm saying, as a member of the band, is that I think that it's Bobbins, and I think that it's a great song, but I think if that is going to follow the melody all the way through, then it's just people are going to get bored with it.
Can you just play the bass with it? Because, like, then you can knock it about a bit yourself.
Do you reckon it's cool?
Is it?
Hey?
We can do it now.
Well, what are we
going to
do?
Well, I don't know until we do it. I mean, if you play along, I'll...
Yeah, but I mean, for both...
You're jamming, isn't it? You're jamming.
Just do it with the tape and just have the voices in the drums.
I'm in pieces.
It's more the aspiration of where you're going than how life is at the moment. Nobody could pretend that playing in a band who are unsigned and are, with all due respect to the distant cousins, unsuccessful at the moment, is a great pleasure in itself. It's a pleasure at the times you're doing it, but unfortunately most of life you aren't doing your work. Most of your life you're there physically having to pay your bills.
And waiting for the opportunities.
And the one concentration on your mind really is the aspiration of where you're going, as opposed to how successful and how satisfied you are with your art.
I still do enjoy playing music, and I always will enjoy playing music, but in 30 years' time, I don't see myself being in a rock and roll band.
You're not really thinking that it's always just around the corner. It certainly hasn't been with us. It's been around several corners, but it's like there will come a point, obviously, where if it's not happened, you just can't be bothered anymore. You know, it'll be as simple as that.
Retired from the business, I went into a couple of other things, and then I was drawn back at the time when Distant Cousins were starting, and thought that's the thing for me. And perhaps when I'm 52 and saying I will never pick my bass up again, some old codger in the home will come up to me and say, I've got this great idea for a band.
I've got this girl, Bobs. Get your pension button, we're on tour. Oh,
that's improved tenfold.
Nice. Another worldwide hit.
That was great, I like
that. What a great show for the week. Got a picture of Margaret Hound on my bedroom wall.
Is anyone taking a beer?
Can
you go for a quick one?
I couldn't actually eat a curry now, could you? What do you think? No.
I don't know.
Let's go and have a quick beer.
I could take a quick beer. Sound check.